we have Stephanie Luce on the phone. Hi, thanks again for joining us. We talked a couple weeks ago, and true to form, Donald Trump has given us a lot to work with already, before even becoming president. So you have agreed to trudge through a discussion about the pick of Labor Secretary, but not particularly him, but the wonderful challenges that are already in motion to stop any conservative backlash against worker gains of late. Let me just tell folks a little bit of about who you are. Stephanie, Associate Professor at the Murphy Institute, City University of New York, Labor Studies, and you are also the author of Fighting for a Living Wage and Labor Movement's Global Perspectives, which was published in 2014. So indeed, the good, the bad, and the ugly, there's some ugly and bad in the pick of Andrew Puzder as Trump's potential labor secretary, and he's pretty much anti-everything, of course, but so fill in the blank, unions, minimum wage, and that leads us to be able to talk about some of what's been going on around the fight for 15, minimum wage, and the add a union piece to this. We've got some good recent victories to talk about, but first, I wanted to point out, Puzder wrote a book with Professor David Newton, who is a professor of entrepreneurial finance, and they wrote this ebook called Job Creation: How It Really Works and Why Governments Don't Understand It. This conceivably is this conservative narrative around job creation. So I wanted to have you start there. What is that myth? What is that narrative, and how do we counter it?
So, so Puzder is really a challenge for us, because it's just the fact that he comes from the fast food sector is first and foremost just a giant middle finger to the fast food workers campaign. So I think partly he was selected for that reason. But I think, as you said, one of the challenges is he has an ideological view that jobs are created by the private sector and the private sector alone, and that governments should not interfere with that. And that, in fact, what we should do is just deregulate labor markets, cut the minimum wage or keep it as low as we can, cut union rights. In fact, he almost supports open borders in a way, which is an interesting twist. But he says, you know, no regulations on employers, and that's the way we get jobs created. And in fact, that's quite false. It's in many ways the opposite of what we know about job creation, which is that really the most effective job creation comes with strong government support, with governments helping to support research and development, governments creating regulations to raise the floor in terms of the minimum wage and safety and health and so forth, and governments also investing in industries and, frankly, in protecting them. So much of job creation, the strong job creation, comes at times when governments are very active in terms of guiding job creation and job growth.
And you alluded to this open borders business. I think it's Veronica Birkenstock, who's also on the labor team, and her company is responsible for providing foreign workers, foreign workforce, low-wage workers to come in and work for companies who apparently can't find people to work for them. I'm not sure if that's something that you've looked into or not. I barely was able to have a look at it, but it's related to the H-2B visa. And of course, Trump argued that he would go after companies that were using immigrant labor and abusing visa programs, but I suppose that won't happen.
Yeah, I mean, Puzder has some controversial positions in relation to the Trump campaign in terms of the immigration issue, for example. He's also controversial within the Christian right because of his promotion of what the Christian right called soft porn in his commercials for Carl's Jr.'s and Hardee's. So, you know, I don't even know if they'll raise opposition to his appointment. I don't imagine his views on immigration will dominate. I think what will dominate is a continued trend among the conservative forces of promoting and allowing immigration as long as it's under a two-tier system or second-class citizenship. So using guest workers who don't have the same rights or might have lower wages, using guest workers to break unions, using guest workers to really to demobilize labor activity. So I think we'll still see that under the Trump administration, unless we can fight it. They're going to keep trying to do that.
So let's move on to some of the good. In recent days or recent weeks, there was a victory for New York City airport workers who didn't just win a raise, but they actually continued their fight for a union and are now a recognized SEIU union. And I wanted to talk about that in connection to the fight for 15 and a union. That fight was not always pieced together. There was a lot of work around living wage and raising the minimum wage, but at a certain point, this idea that building unions and belonging to a union was an important piece of stabilizing workers' rights and being able to fight these attacks. So can you talk a little bit about that campaign and why it was so important for them to also go after that union?
Yeah, I think from the start, the first fast food workers' strikes in 2012 did make that demand $15 in a union. And it has been a goal of a lot of these efforts from the start. It's just that employers fight unionization much more than they fight the higher wage. In fact, for many employers, raising the minimum wage is not a huge cost to them. And in fact, some of them see some benefits of it because, again, a Walmart worker is also a Walmart shopper. More money for workers means more money to spend. But they don't feel the same about unions. Employers hate unions, want to keep them out for the most part because they don't want any restrictions on what they can do and they don't want to really have that power struggle. So it's been much harder to win the union piece. So this victory in the New York City area airports is exciting. It's 8,000 workers who work for subcontractors in the airport. And that campaign's been going on for about the length of the Fight for 15 campaign, for about 5 years. Now, the wages piece is separate from the union contract. So the New Jersey workers at Newark Airport won't be reaching the 15 yet. So that fight still continues. But they do have union representation and the union contract. And part of that will stabilize schedules, will give some workers minimum 32 hours a week, and give the kind of protections that you don't get if you don't have a union. And I would argue that it's absolutely crucial that we continue to fight for the 15, but we do that alongside the unionization piece, because we know in this moment, any gains we win legislatively may not be enforced. The governor of Maine has called on the Department of Labor to stop enforcing the state minimum wage there. And it's really only with a union that these kinds of victories will be real.
And that is a really important piece of this, is that implementation, which we talked about in our last discussion a couple weeks ago, how difficult it is to get implementation. And I also think in terms of worker solidarity and the fight back on the attacks and the divisive tactics that will be used against workers, the creation of scarcity, and all of this is really important to stabilizing worker relations with each other as much as fighting off the attacks. And I think that piece about creating a better future, building stronger communities and sustainability and struggling for things like affordable health care, all of that stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the danger in this moment is when people like authoritarian rulers come in, when Trump comes in, and they try and co-opt working class movements. It's possible Trump will come in and support a $10 wage, but that would come with all these other exclusions and divisions. And it would be used to seem like a populist victory, but it would be used to divide the working class. And I think we really have to stick together and see that the gains we fight for right now have to be collective gains. We cannot accept any kind of deals that will divide us from one another or demobilize our movements.
Yeah, that's really important. In our last minute or so, the bigger fight, which is, you know, it's always the icing on the cake to hope for a socialist revolution, but but why not talk about it, right? So, yeah. And you've written about this in terms of really the Fight for 15 is not a substitute for a radical anti-capitalist agenda, but it's
absolutely,
but there are lots of great wins there. Talk about that just a little bit. What's the importance of that radicalization?
Yeah. Well, for me, the $15 wage movement is important because it affects millions of workers, but it's especially important because what it's doing is challenging the idea that markets should set wages and that employers know best what the wages are. Really, the movement is most valuable as a movement builder. And what that means is bringing people together under a common demand, but a demand that challenges markets and the free market principle. And ideally, we make these movements as ways to challenge capitalism and to challenge the free market fundamentalism. I think we have to continue that direction. We have to build the organizations that are in place for the next economic crisis and to promote alternative visions of how to run our economy.
Well said, and thank you so much for joining us again on The Old Mole, Stephanie Luce.
Sure. Thank you.
We will certainly have cause to have you back.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you again.